Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of eDraft.com's Back 9 Report. We come to you online every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and from the world of golf, we bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, along with recaps, previews, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Unfortunately, this week, Ryder Cup week, I won't be able to be with you guys other than this recording. Fred will be there with Kieran Clark, our European guru, subbing in for me. Hey, no one better to do it than him. So from the European side, Kieran Clark will bring you his take. Fred will take Team USA. They're going to have more to go at it this week. They started a couple of weeks ago with the Ryder Cup previews. But hey, I'm here just to let you know in recording who I think is going to win. Okay? It's going to be Team USA. I'm going to keep it short. The guys have a lot to talk about, a lot they could do two shows to let you know about the Ryder Cup. But I'm just going to give you in 1 minute what I think. Okay? Two things. One, Team Europe is the overwhelming favorite. They're playing at home. And the guys can talk more about this than I'm going to say. But Team Europe, it means more to Team Europe, the Ryder Cup, to win it. So when you're at home, you're the overwhelming favorite. And it means so much to you, the Ryder Cup. All the pressure is in you. Team USA doesn't have that pressure. They can go out, let it loose under Tom Watson, go out there and play their game, and they're very capable of beating Team Europe. Okay? Just remember Team USA and Team Europe in the Solheim Cup last year. So, hey, Team USA does have that advantage. It does. It works. Okay, Team Europe, overwhelming favorite, at home. When it means so much, all the pressure is in you. Team USA, if you lose, hey, they lose that everybody expected. Now, second, I have two names, two players, rookies, that are going to be key. These two players are made for this kind of event, okay, for the Ryder Cup. Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed. They might not be playing at their best, but this is the kind of competition that gets their juices flowing. They were born to play this game. To play this, the Ryder Cup, along with Ricky Fowler and Keegan Bradley. Those four names, okay, those four players are going to be the key, and we're going to be talking about them as the key for Team USA's win this past weekend, and that's going to be next Tuesday when I'm back. So, Fred, there you have it. Team USA, Kieran, Fred, take it over. Enjoy. Have a good one.
Well, Carlos is on an airplane flying from Puerto Rico to Miami tonight, but through the wonder of technology, he taped that little segment to open the show. He hates it that he cannot be here with us tonight, Kieran, and we have got a great show lined up, pretty much Ryder Cup wall to wall. We're sorry that Carlos can't be here, but we are just happy that you can from Scotland, just a few miles actually from Glen Eagles, where the Ryder Cup will be contended in just 2 days. So, Kieran, welcome.
Thank you, Fred. And yes, I'm only 14 miles away from Glen Eagles. And I can tell you the excitement certainly building up here. Everywhere you go around, I'm in Perth, the capital of Perthshire, and everywhere you go around here, there's signs up, there's banners, there's flags for USA and even Europe as well. It's all there, and it's certainly the anticipation is rising. I saw people walking around Perth today with the Ryder Cup merchandise, so they spent an absolute fortune buying overpriced merchandise goods, but I'm sure they're happy, and the Ryder Cup is going to be tremendous. The weather forecast is looking pretty good as well, Fred, so for once, Scotland's going to be dry.
That's hard to believe. I thought I looked at a weather report, and it was pretty much rain every day.
Oh, don't talk rubbish.
Well, as always, we want to bring you our slant on the golf news from around the world. And the first item we have involves how the Ryder Cup may have created a rift between two old friends. Unlike the American Ryder Cup captain, who's appointed by the PGA of America, the European captain is selected by the players. Paul McGinley is one of those popular players from Europe, Europe, and that was demonstrated when the Europeans picked McGinley 2 years ago as captain. Not everyone was happy at the time, and a rift has developed between Darren Clark and himself. Darren Clark lost his wife in 2006 just prior to the PGA Championship at Medina. Many of his friends, Graham McDowell, Patrick Herring, and Lee Westwood, considered pulling out of that major to be with Clark in Ireland at his most difficult time. Clark assured everyone to stay in Chicago and compete in the golf tournament just as his deceased wife would have wished. One player, though, Paul McGinley and his wife, did make the long trek back to Ireland. McGinley and Clark were very close, and their wives had been best friends. McGinley and Clark played junior events together in Ireland growing up, and their parents even took turns carpooling the young lads to tournaments. When the selection process began for the European Ryder Cup captain 2 years ago, Clark sent a letter to McGinley that he was not interested in the captaincy for the 2014 team. Shortly after the 2012 Ryder Cup at Medina, Clark changed his mind and let it be known that he did want to be considered for the captain's role. Clark's good buddy Lee Westwood even said as much in a press conference in Turkey. After the American debacle at Medina, newly appointed PGA of America president Ted Bishop appointed Tom Watson as U.S. captain for the American team. Late in 2012, Clark did another about-face and announced he would rather play in the Ryder Cup than be a captain. He made a statement to the press at the time, "Whoever is standing on that stage opposite Tom Watson needs a huge presence. We seriously need the right man for the job." This, however, wasn't an endorsement for his old friend McGinley. Clark had switched his allegiance to Colin Montgomery, the hero from Medina. That had to be a huge slap in the face to his fellow Irishman, McGinley. Clark had done yet another about-face, and McGinley had to feel betrayed. In the end, the choice came down to Clark and McGinley. Ian Poulter, Rory McIlroy, who was ranked number 3 in the world, and Luke Donald, who was number 1 at the time, all backed McGinley for the job. That is some serious weight being thrown behind Paul McGinley. The process all got sorted out, and finally, on January 13, McGinley indeed was announced as the European captain, but there has been evidence of some bruised egos and shattered friendships along the way. McGinley and Clark had been childhood friends, traveling companions on the European Tour, and teammates on several winning Ryder Cup teams. Captain McGinley has five vice-captains, Sam Torrance, Jose Maria Lothable, Padraig Harrington, Miguel and Al Jimenez, and Des Smythe. But the name of Darren Clark is missing from the list. There may even be some more dissension on the European team room at Glen Eagles. Kerry and I believe there are some new happenings in the messy Rory McIlroy lawsuit against his former management company, Horizon, that also affects Graham McDowell.
Yes, absolutely, Fred. And I must quickly mention there about what you said there about Darren Clark and Paul McGinley. And Fred, the politics behind the European Tour are quite something in the Ryder Cup. It makes the U.S. Congress look like a high school club, but it's quite remarkable stuff that goes on behind the scenes in the European Tour. But yes, on to Rory McIlroy and Graham McDowell and the contentious legal battle between Rory McIlroy and his former management company, Horizon. And it took yet another turn last week. James Corrigan of the Daily Telegraph has reported both sides were instructed last Tuesday to hold peace talks by a judge due to the sensitive involvement of McIlroy's compatriot and, of course, Ryder Cup teammate Graham McDowell. Mr. Justice Brian McGovern said in Dublin High Court that as the case involved matters such as the personal business concerns of Graham McDowell, that a process of mediation should now ensue. And this has all come about, Fred, after McIlroy's lawyer submitted an application to discover documents relating to Graham McDowell's contractual relationship with Horizon. McIlroy, who is suing Horizon, wants to have his contract with them made void and has claimed he received markedly lesser representation terms than McDowell, despite allegedly being told that he would receive similar terms to Graham McDowell. And McIlroy initially joined Horizon back in 2011, in December of 2011, before signing an extended contract early last year. However, things turned sour, and he split from them just a few months later. And the judge directed both parties to hold talks over the subsequent 28 days, so for into October time, but he said he would not stall the progress of the case, which is scheduled to be heard in February of next year. And Fred, you mentioned there about issues with the Ryder Cup, and of course, the Ryder Cup's now 2 days away, and it's right on the horizon, Fred, and that's not a pun. And it remains to be seen if McIlroy and McDowell will resume their partnership played with each other in the last two Ryder Cups. Will they resume that partnership? We'll have to wait and see. I suspect they will not. But to be honest with you, it's not just because of this legal case. That's certainly part of it. So, and Fred, there was a split in another respect from Adam Scott and Stevie Williams.
Yeah, you know, we like our caddy controversy here, you know, on Back Nine Report. And it was reported last week that Adam Scott and his caddy, Steve Williams, are ending their very successful partnership. Williams has been a valuable asset to Scott since joining him in the summer of 2011 after being fired by Tiger Woods. Scott won the WGC Bridgestone Invitational and the 2013 Masters with Stevie on the bag. He also added the 2013 Barclays and ascended to the number one spot in the official world golf rankings. Williams was Tiger's caddy for 13 of his 14 major championships. He also did stints toting for Greg Norman and Raymond Floyd. He began his career at the age of 13 when he caddied for five-time Open champion Peter Thomson in New Zealand. Scott was seen as an underachiever until Williams brought his intense, no-nonsense style of golf to the Aussie. Perhaps Williams' greatest asset as a caddy is demanding the absolute best from his player at all times. Whether in the gym or on the course, he raises the expectations of the player and wills him to succeed through hard work and focus. Williams can be overly candid with his remarks and has had brushes with the media, but in the end, he is a player's coach, confessor, trainer, and best friend. Now, at the age of 50, Williams announced earlier this year that he wanted to curtail his busy schedule. Scott is still at the prime of his career and needs a caddy that is still motivated to travel the world. Their split was a mutual decision and helps avoid a melancholy victory lap for Williams that would divert attention away from Scott. Steve Williams was recently inducted into the Caddy Hall of Fame and could soon find a spot in the World Golf Hall of Fame. In an interview with World Golf Foundation CEO Steve Mona on the September 9th Back Nine Report, he said the World Golf Hall of Fame has discussed nominating caddies in the past for induction. Steve Williams is one of the best caddies that has ever hoisted a golf bag and walked a fairway. A bust in the World Golf Hall of Fame may be in his future. I wonder if Tiger Woods will do his induction speech, Kieran.
good luck with that. I would not go down very well, I don't think. But yes, Fred, I have some news from the R&A from St. Andrews, where I'm going to be tomorrow, actually in a matter of 7 hours from now. And, of course, Fred, there were two big votes in Scotland last week, the biggest of which was clearly the Scottish independence referendum. But the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews also had a little referendum of their own. And after 260 years of existence, the famous club has finally voted to accept women as part of their membership. The Royal and Ancient Golf Club was formerly the governing body of the game of golf worldwide, apart from the United States and Mexico, but a separate organization simply called the R&A was established in 2004 to run the game. But, of course, despite that, the governing body is still forever associated with its sister club, with its all-male membership policy appearing outdated by at least a century, and it's a real embarrassment for the game of golf. And all-male and also all-female clubs do exist, but it is the Royal and Ancient Association with the governing body that has made their position untenable for many people for a number of years now. And this took another turn earlier this year when HSBC, who sponsored the Open Championship, voiced concerns earlier this year about the all-male policy, and there is little doubt that the financial implications of potentially losing revenue for the Open Championship, which in turn would reduce the R&A's revenue, and that would force the club to make the move in addition to golf inclusion in the 2016 Olympic Games as well. They have to be seen to be an inclusive organization. And the vote was announced on Thursday, and almost 75% of the club's 2,400 membership participated in the vote, so a quarter were missing. And the vote went firmly in favor of accepting female members by a dominant margin of 85%. Although it does make you wonder, friend, who that 5% was, you know, a couple of hundred of real old dinosaurs, I expect, that voted against it. But a new era for the R&A, and it was also ushered in by a new captain. 70-year-old George McGregor began his new one-year term as captain of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club by completing the driving-in ceremony by hitting a tee shot on the first hole of the old course, which I shall be doing in just under 7 hours now. And McGregor was one of Scotland's best amateur players. He represented Great Britain and Ireland on five occasions at the Walker Cup and also served as captain of the Walker Cup team in 1991 and 1993. and his Scotland international career spanned 18 years, and he won the Scottish Stroke Play Championship in 1982, also the same year as he reached the final of the Scottish Amateur Championship. And he's also served on the RNA's Championship, Amateur Status and Selection Committees, and has been the Director of Championships at the Scottish Golf Union since 2010. He's also awarded an OBE in 1996 for his services to amateur golf. So a big honour for him. And part of the tradition of the driving in ceremony, Fred, is that a gold sovereign has to be paid by the new captain to buy his golf ball back from the caddy who retrieves and returns it. So really quite ridiculous. But anyway, Oliver Horowitz, who is now in his ninth season as a caddy on the links, and he's also a famous author as well. He's wrote a great book about his time as a caddy on the Old Course. He successfully returned the captain's ball for the second time in his 9 years at the Old Course, and he received the gold sovereign. So a fun moment for Oliver that day, and also for George, but for the RNA as a whole, Fred, you know, progress finally, the RNA has now finally progressed, Fred, into the 20th century. Well done to them.
Well, you in Scotland, you know, you're just a little bit behind the times over there, so that's pretty much right up to speed for you guys. Hey, I want you to know, Kieran, I'm feeling quite distinguished, actually, because I now know personally two members of the RNA Golf Club. So I just want you to, you know, maybe have a new appreciation of me now.
Well, can I just say, Fred, that tomorrow when I'm playing the Old Course, there are a number of RNA people playing behind me, so perhaps one of these people might be one of the people you actually know. Who knows?
No, they're not there right now, but...
Oh, dear.
Sorry. Hey, our last story tonight, pretty much all our stories tonight have kind of a Ryder Cup theme to them, but this one does not, except for the fact that Phil Mickelson is on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. The Calgary Sun reported last week that Phil Mickelson has been hired to design a golf course in Calgary, Alberta, Canada that will bear his name. Johnny Miller and Stephen Ames were initially picked to build the new course, but Mickelson's star power and likability won out. The course owner had courted Mickelson for the last 6 months and had a face-to-face meeting with the three-time Master Champion in San Diego that cinched the deal. The new project has already begun selling memberships to the private course at a $40,500 price tag. You'll probably want to. You want me to send you the link so you can get your money in for that, Kieran? The highly anticipated course is slated to break ground within the next few months. If so, the course could be open as early as the fall of 2017, with an eye on potentially building an additional 9 or 18 holes soon after that. Phil thinks he can build something that never has been done in Calgary, and he will be working very closely with the team and plans to make several trips into Canada. It's still under design, but they want it to be a PGA-quality golf course that is somewhere between 7,800 and 8,000 yards long. Phil will have the final say on the yardage once he's on the ground during the construction. Ames has reportedly gone on record saying the Canadian Open can't be hosted on any courses in Calgary due to the elevation. He says makes them all play too short for the world's best players. By most accounts, 8,000 yards would be plenty to attract the attention of Golf Canada, who had long had an eye on finding a place to put the Canadian Open in Calgary. Well, Phil doesn't put his name on too many courses, and so he wants to focus on only one or two courses at a time. So he's going to be spending a lot of time with the new Calgary project. And as a winner of 42 PGA events, 5 majors, and more than $75 million in prize money, Mickelson knows a thing about making a golf course. He's designed a few courses in China. He's currently redoing Torrey Pines North in his hometown, San Diego. His crowning achievement so far as a designer is Whisper Rock Golf Club's lower course in Scottsdale, Arizona, where he is a resident. This will likely be the only one he does in Canada, said the source, adding Mickelson's design team spent 3 days in Calgary this summer. So, Phil's designing a new golf course, but John Daly tweeted last week, have to shut the doors and sell my golf course lines then. Really sad day, not enough members. Daly grew up near Lions Den, learned to play there as a junior golfer, and bought the course in 2005. And, of course, Daly, everyone knows, burst on the golf scene by amazingly winning the 1991 PGA Championship as the eighth alternate when Nick Price was forced to withdraw, Four more wins on the PGA Tour would follow, including the 1995 Open Championship. This is yet another chapter in the John Daly saga of ex-wives, drinking, and gambling problems encountered by the professional. Another thing for John. It's too bad. He seemed to really enjoy the course there. But Kieran, 8,000 yards for Phil's new course, that's got to be like a par 90 for me. How about you?
Well, to be fair, I don't care how high it is and the elevation changes there. To me, an 8,000-yard golf course is actually quite depressing, and we need that these days. You know, the golf ball is going far too far, Fred. It needs to be reeled back a little bit for these top players, and the RNA and the USGA have got to do something about it because too many of the world's greatest golf courses are becoming obsolete because they're not long enough, and that's sad.
It is. I agree with you 100%. That wraps up the Par 5 news for tonight, Golfaholics. And so, Vincent, if you will take us to our first break, please.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Before we get to our discussion and analysis of the Ryder Cup that's going to be up here in 2 days, we want to do some quick recaps from last week's action. The biggest tournament going probably was on the Web.com Tour that concluded its 2014 season with its Tour Championship at Dyes Valley Course at TPC Sawgrass. Derek Fathauer collected his first professional win by posting a final round 200 par 68 and edging Zach Blair by a single stroke. After a very successful amateur career, Fathauer qualified for the 2009 PGA Tour, but finished number 201 on the money list and lost his tour card. He's played solid golf all season on the web.com in 8 top 10s, 15 top 25s, and in just 19 events. With $468,000 total earnings, he ends the season at number 2 in the priority ranking for next year. Adam Hadwin, who won the Chiquita Classic, finished T10 in the Children's Hospital Championship, T7 in the web.com Tour Championship, and he was number 1 in the web.com Tour Finals ranking. He, along with Carlos Ortiz, who won 3 titles on the tour, will receive top priority into any PGA tournament next season and both qualify for the Players' Championship in May. PGA Tour veteran Heath Slocum missed a cut at both the Hotel Fitness and the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship. He finished T16 in the Chiquita Classic and T4 in the Tour Championship. His strong finish last week moved him from number 71 to number 33, and he saved his job on the PGA Tour for one more year. The last man in at number 50 is 40-year-old Eric Axley, who previously played on the PGA Tour 2006 to 2009. Axley won the 2006 Valero Texas Open, but has been off the PGA Tour since 2010. In 10 starts on the PGA Tour this year, he made 7 cuts and finished at number 184 on the FedEx Cup points list, which earned him a trip to the Web.com Tour Finals. With 4 top 50 finishes in the final 4 events, he earned just enough to garner the last exemption for the 2014-2015 PGA Tour season. Names of those of note who failed to make it into the top 50, Vaughn Taylor, Greg Chalmers, Roberto Castro, Dickie Pride, and Patrick Rogers. If you're curious, you can view the full listing of the 50 players that earned their spots at thepgatour.com, and they will have the full listing there. Kieran, do you have any comments about the web.com Tour Championship last week?
Yes, Fred. I'm looking through the list of players who made it through right now, all 50 of them, and there's a wonderful variety of names. You mentioned guys like Carlos Ortiz, obviously a young player coming through, played so well this season. But there's a lot of veterans as well who are making their way back to the PGA Tour next year, including Alex Chaker, who really has had a fantastic year on the web.com tour, a player who was initially a European Tour star. Then he went to the United States about 12 years ago, had limited success there, but you know, made quite a good living for himself. He's back on the PGA Tour, as is Greg Owen from England. You also have guys like, even veterans like Tom Gillis, who's 46, getting back on the PGA Tour is a great thing for him. And one that fascinates me is Richard Stearney, who's a South African player who plays predominantly on the European Tour, has won six times on the European Tour. He's a tremendous player. He's a very underrated talent. He's now made his way onto the PGA Tour as well, so fantastic for him. And you also have guys like Colt Knost and Jason Gore who have made it back. And, of course, Sam Saunders, Arnold Palmer's grandson, will be on the PGA Tour next year as well. So fantastic for Arnold Palmer to see his grandson on the PGA Tour next year. And then, of course, some of the guys who fell out of the 1-2-5 in the PGA Tour played into the final series here. And they had guys like Hudson Swafford and Sean O'Hare, Heath Slocum and J.J. Henry. They retained their card via the Tour Finals in the web.com Tour. So a great variety of names. Another concern I have for these guys, Fred, is you have 50 players coming out of the web.com tour here. 125 guys kept their card in the FedEx Cup. It's 175 players already, and that's not including the guys who are on medical exemptions and various other things, reduced exemptions as well. So you're having perhaps 200 players competing to get into events with fields that are often no more than 150 players. So you know, all these guys are technically on the PGA Tour, but how many events will they get to play? That's my question.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked to Web.com Tour president Bill Calfee a couple weeks ago over here at the Hotel Fitness Championship, and that was one of the things that they looked very hard at. You know, with so many players, it's hard for these guys to get in the field. There's these six events in the fall. They've got to try and get in as many of those as they can because the big guys don't play in those. And then after the first of the year, it's hard to get in some of those events, Hawaii, the West Coast Swing, and then into Florida, because the veterans and the guys with higher rankings start coming in. That's why it's so important to finish high in this priority ranking, like Carlos Ortiz and like Adam Hadwin has done. They can get in and get their chances, get their reps. But some of these other guys have a tough time. It's hard to stay on tour. You're exactly right. Moving on to the LPGA Tour, the Yokohama Tire LPGA Classic was held in Prattville, Alabama, just north of Montgomery over the weekend. And it made its second stop of the season in Alabama, actually. Mee Young Her found the winner's circle after not winning an LPGA Tour event since 2009. Since missing the cut at the Canadian Pacific Women's Open, Her has rattled off three top 10 finishes. She was T9 in Portland, tied for third at the Evian, and now one in Alabama. Her first win came in a rookie season in 2009 Safeway Classic in Portland over Suzanne Pettersson and Michelle Redmond. She moves to number 27 in the race to the CMA Globe and number 65 in the Rolex ranking. At just 24 years old, Her could be finding her game and confidence necessary to be a top contender on the LPGA Tour. World number one Stacey Lewis tried valiantly to catch her. She carded four birdies on the front nine on Sunday, added two more on the backside for a 6-under par 66, but couldn't catch her, who fired her own 66 to maintain the four-shot win. Lewis, who had finished outside the top 10 in five of her previous six starts, looked like her old self, hitting fairways, knocking down flagsticks with accurate iron shots. With a six-event swing through Asia and the Lorena Ochoa Invitational in Mexico remaining before the season-ending CME Group Championship, Lewis has a commanding lead in the race to the CME Globe. Rookie Paula Rito collected her best finish on the LPGA Tour. She was tied with her for the 54-hole lead, but a final round, one over par 73, left her alone in third place. Chris Tomoulis has been on the LPGA Tour since 2005 and garnered her third top 10 of the year, finished alone in fourth place. Lexi Thompson, who won her first LPGA Tour title on this golf course in 2011 as a 16-year-old, missed the cut. After a week off, Carrie and the ladies will head to Beijing, China for the Ryanewood LPGA Classic October 2nd through the 5th.
Yeah, well, you know, for Meijing Her, Fred, You know, fantastic win for her, second LPGA Tour win, of course coming 5 years after her first, and I think she was a teenager when she won that first title at the Safeway Classic. So, you know, hasn't done too much really since then, but she came back to form at the Evian Championship 2 weeks ago, and she finished, I think it was third at the Evian in France. So a real burst of form there from her, and she got the victory, and a fantastic win for her. And of course, Stacey Lewis, we talk about Stacey Lewis, she had a bit of a quiet spell there for 5-6 weeks, but, you know, her form this year has been quite remarkable. That, Fred, was her 15th top 10 of this season, which is a quite remarkable statistic. And, you know, it just illustrates the consistency in her game and the high quality. All facets of her game are very strong right now. And she's back in on form. And going into the rest of the season, she's going to be very hard to shift. And I fully expect her to try and get another win before the end of the season, because the way she's playing this year, you know, the one criticism you can make of Stacey Lewis this year, Fred, is she hasn't won perhaps quite enough. But the way she's played has been fantastic, and I fully expect her to get a win before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think she's going to probably win one in Asia, and I look forward to be tough there at the championship also. The rest of the tournaments will go down through here rather quickly. Kieran, I'll turn it over to you in a minute. Paul Goidos posed 4-under-68 on Sunday to win the Pacific Links Hawaii Championship on the Champions Tour. Goidos turned 50 in June and has played in only 5 events on the senior circuit, but has a win to go with his 3 top 10 finishes. He still had status on the PGA Tour this year, and in 19 events, only made 4 cuts, playing with the young guys. Goidos has a very quick, dry wit, and his nickname is Sunshine because he always tends to see the downside of any situation. At 50, he's a little bit too short off the tee to compete on the regular tour, but his game fits nicely on the Champions Tour. And 9-under-par-63 on Saturday gave him the 36-hole lead. He started the final round on Sunday with a 2-under-par front nine, and he turned it up a notch on the back with 4 consecutive birdies at number 14 through 17. He finished at 19-under-par for the 3 rounds, good enough for a one-shot lead over Scott Dunlop and Fred Funk, who had been tied with Goidos for the lead at the start of the day. Dunlop has been red hot over the last few weeks. In his last 4 events, he has 1 win and 2 runners-up. One of the highlights of the week was a 12-under-par-60 shot by Tom Pernice, Jr. on Friday. He followed with 72-70 on the weekend and fell to T7. Vijay Singh was in the mix after a 66-65 in the first 3 rounds, but with an even par 72 on Sunday, he fell 9 spots to T12. Both Bernard Long and Colin Montgomery set out the Pacific Links. They are the leaders in the Charles Schwab Cup, and we are waiting to see them come back to action. On the European Tour, Kieran, you had the ISPS Hand Up Wales Open. Hoos Luyten held on by the hair on his chinny-chin-chin to successfully defend. Luyten did not play his best in the final round, but managed to eke out a 1-stroke victory over Tommy Fleetwood and Shane Lowry. European Ryder Cupper Jamie Donaldson finished with a T4 with Eduardo Molinari, Nicholas Kolsart, and 2 others. European Ryder Cup team member Stephen Gallagher shot 78-70 and missed the 36-hole cut on Friday. Maybe there is hope for the American team yet, Carl or Kieran. In the Ladies European Tour, the Tenerife Open de España, South African Connie Chen fired a superb final round of 3-under-par-69 in hot and breezy conditions to earn her first Ladies European Tour victory. The 21-year-old from Pretoria ended on 12-under-par and 2 strokes clear of home favorite Carlotta Segonda, with Beth Allen of the United States a stroke further behind in third and English Charlie Hall in solo fourth place. Chen, whose previous best finish in 4 years on tour was a tie for 7th in this year's Burbank Golf Masters in the Czech Republic. Chen began the final round tied for the lead with Amy Bolden, but started strongly with a birdie on the picturesque fourth hole. She was 3 strokes clear of Segonda with a hole to play. Chen hit 2 superb shots at the edge of the par 5 18th green, but mishit her chip and finished with a bogey. She said, "I was very nervous over that chip," who missed 7 cuts in 12 starts this season. So pretty big bounce back for her. With her victory, Chen becomes the 12th first-time winner on the Ladies European Tour event this year. It's Carlos Segonda failed to become the first Spanish winner of the Ladies Spanish Open Championship, but will take positive thoughts from a final round 69. Any comments on anything from last week on recaps, Kieran?
Yeah, and firstly with Paul Goidos, you know, fantastic win for him. And 2 years ago, Freddie had surgery on his wrist, and it took him out of the game for 15 months. So to come back from that and then get his first win in the Champions Tour is a massive thing for him. And also, Fred, a certain player made his debut on the Champions Tour last week as well, and that was Davis Love III, a 20-time PGA Tour winner, 97 PGA champion. And he made his first start on the Senior Tour, but he found it tough. He finished 18 shots behind Goidoff. So it's a tough Champions Tour is tough. You know, the guys play a really high quality game and they shoot low every single day, so it's tough to keep up with that. And Davis will have to sort of adapt to that if he wants to be successful in the Champions Tour. But I'm sure he will get there when he plays more regularly on that tour. And in the Wales Open, as you say, Fred, you Slouten, you know, a really difficult day for him on Sunday. It's never easy coming into a final round with a lead, a two-shot lead coming into the final round. He got off to a really bad start with birdies at one, bogeys at number one and number two, but he bounced back with birdies at 11 and 12. And then he had a struggle on 18 where he almost hit his tee shot out of bounds. He had a really terrible layup into the rough, and the water short of the 18th at Celtic Manor, it's a par 5. And he just got his ball on the front edge of the green, and he had a big 50-foot putt, had a two-putt to win, and he did it successfully. So he showed some real strength at the end there, but with a very nervous finish for Joost Luiten. That's his fourth European Tour win of his career, but his first of this season, which may be a surprise because he's played very well this year, very consistent. He was really on kind of the fringes of perhaps being a potential European Ryder Cup player, and I would not be surprised to see him in the Ryder Cup team in 2 years' time at Hazeltine. And Tommy Fleetwood as well had a remarkable finish. He finished in a tie for second, the Englishman who won at Glen Eagles last year in the Johnny Walker Championship, and he had a remarkable finish. He finished birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie to finish tie for second alongside Shane Lowry, who's Loughton's closest challenger coming into the final round. He shot a final round of 70, which wasn't really good enough, disappointing day for the Irishman. And an interesting group in fourth place. You had Nicholas Coulthard back to form, the former Ryder Cup player. Jamie Donaldson, he's holding the event before he goes to Glen Eagles for the Ryder Cup. He showed some fantastic form there, finishing fourth, as did Eddie Pepperell, Mark Warren, and former Ryder Cup player Eduardo Molinari. And three other Ryder Cup players were in the field. Thomas Bjorn and Lee West had both finished the week well over par, way down the field. They made the cut, but finished well on the field, while Stephen Gallagher, or as you say, Fred, missed the cut there. So, but again, they have another thing on their minds, of course. And over in the Ladies European Tour, as you say, you know, Connie Chen getting her first win on the LET is fantastic, finishing two shots ahead of Carlota Saganda. Of course, a home favourite, trying to become the first Spanish woman to win that event. And, of course, Saganda's been in Solheim Cup teams, was part of that wonderful, successful Spanish international crown team a couple of months ago, so that's a big scalp for Connie Chen to get that victory. And as you say, Fred, Charlie Hall, really the poster girl of the LET, finished four shots back. So fantastic for her there. And Fred, I must quickly mention also the Senior Tour in Germany as well. They were there, and Bernard Langer, obviously he usually plays in the Champions Tour, but he was over in the Senior Tour this week, and he lost out in a playoff. Someone actually beat Bernard Langer, Paul Westling, last year's Order of Merit winner on the Senior Tour. He beat Bernard Langer on home soil in the third hole of sudden death. And he birdied the last two holes to get into the playoff, Westling, and the Englishman, who was actually once recently a club pro, then he became a touring professional when he turned 50, and he's had so much success since then. And to beat Bernard Langer in Germany is a massive thing. Philip Golding, the Englishman, was also in that playoff. He fell out in the second hole. So for Paul Westling, a fantastic win for him. But Bernard Langer, you know, he's got to get used to getting beat sometimes, Fred, but you know, some really interesting events this week on all tours around the world, but of course our attention turns to the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, before we get to that, I got one more thing I want to just touch base real quick. You know, we pay so much attention and watch so closely to the LPGA Tour that the Sumatra Tour wound up their regular season last week, and 10 women earned their 2015 LPGA Tour cards. By finishing at the top of the money list. The Sumatra Tour consists of 20 tournaments this year, held all around the United States. Marita Engzelius won the Tour Championship, which was the final tournament of the season in Daytona Beach on Sunday. 10 ladies, the top of the money list was Marissa Stein. She had 3 wins this year and 10 top 10 finishes. Just in case you didn't know this, Kieran, she's from Ohio, by the way. you know, this is the center of the golf universe. I'm going to prove that again to you here in just a little bit. She made every cut on the and number two was 24-year-old Min So Wok from South Korea, who spent some time on the LPGA Tour in 2012 and 2013, but she'll be playing on the big tour full-time next season. She made every cut on the Sumatra Tour this year and also chalked up two wins. Jackie Stolting, who was a Big Break alum, didn't win on Sumatra Tour, but was one of the most consistent players on tour all year. She was she only missed one cut in 19 starts and finished in the top 10 on 7 occasions. Another Big Break alum, Sedina Parks, finished fourth on the Sumatra Tour money list and earned her LPGA Tour card. 19-year-old Min Lee finished fifth on the Sumatra Tour money list and is headed to the LPGA Tour. The last five spots were got by Wei Ling Zhu, another teenager from Taipei, Cindy Fang, 18-year-old from China, Kendall Dai from Oklahoma, Demi Runis lost in the playoff at the Sumatra Tour Championship, but her finish was good enough to move her from number 15 to number 9 on the money list and earn her card. Yet another Big Break alum, Mallory Backwelder, finished number 10 and will join her father and brother, both caddies on the LPGA Tour next season. One of the most notable names on the Sumatra Tour, Cheyenne Woods, failed to earn her LPGA Tour card but finished T12 at the Sumatra Tour Championship and will enter Q School to try and make it to the big tour next season. Well, Kieran, if you have nothing else for the recaps, we're going to go to break. And then after that, we'll do our short interview of the week before we get it to the Ryder Cup analysis.
I'm all good, Fred.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and it's time for our very important guest of the week. I had an opportunity to tape an interview with Don Mannix, who is a Twitter and Facebook friend of both Kieran and mine, who's actually on her way to Scotland, or is probably there by now, for the Ryder Cup. And as Kieran has mentioned, she's actually going to join him for a round on the old course in the morning over there. And she agreed to talk with you over the weekend and tell us a little bit about why she just had to go to Glen Eagles this year to see the Ryder Cup. Vincent, you have that tape. You want to roll that, please?
We are so happy to have Don Mannix here on the Background Report with us this evening. And Don has been a longtime friend on Twitter. She interacts with Carlos and myself and Kieran and is kind of a golfer and recently went through a transition moving from New York to Chicago, and she has a lot going on in her life, but she's going to be going to Glen Eagles to the Ryder Cup next week, and we're so happy you would come on the show and talk to us a little bit about that exciting trip coming up.
Well, I'm really grateful that you're having me on the show, and I'm grateful to share my upcoming experience with you to the Ryder Cup.
Hey, I hear you've already got your bags packed, and you're just waiting for the plane to come pick you up.
I do have everything packed already. I have my clubs packed, and I have a carry-on packed, and I am very well equipped for all types of weather. I have my wellies packed, windbreaker, heavier jacket. I am ready for the Scottish climate.
Well, Kieran always tells me it's always sunny and 75 over there. I can't imagine why you would need all that.
That's what I keep being told, but then, you know, I saw a photograph that someone shared this morning on Twitter saying that it was overcast and drizzling. So if that's going to be par for the course over there, I want to be well prepared so that I can enjoy every minute of the tournament and of the country.
I think that's what they call a bonnie day over there.
they do. And that's their regular climate, so I'm going to have to acclimate myself to it. but I don't think it can be much worse than our weather this past year has been in Chicago. So it's actually been colder here than it's been there recently. So most of the time in the morning, it's in the 40s and 50s here, you know. I played last weekend in two layers. So I'm ready for anything that Scotland throws at me.
Hey, how did you make the decision to go to Scotland for the Ryder Cup? That's a pretty long trip just to go to watch a golf tournament.
Well, I was at the last Ryder Cup, which was here in Chicago at Medina, and I was very, very frustrated when the United States lost basically in singles on Sunday. The cup came right out of their hands. You know, their fingertips were on it, and then it was snagged away from them by the Europeans. And I was just completely frustrated and devastated by what happened on Sunday. And I said at the time, I'm going to go to Scotland. I just kind of said it to myself. But then, you know, the wheels got in motion. I entered the European lottery for tickets, and my name was fortunately picked. And that is how the ball got rolling.
What was the most impressive thing that you witnessed last year at Medina? Were you there multiple days or just there one day on Sunday? What impressed you at going to the Ryder Cup last year or 2 years ago?
I was there Thursday and Friday, and it is the most incredible sporting event that I have ever been to. Just the buzz in the air is unreal.
How long have you been playing golf, and how did you get started playing golf?
Okay, I've been playing since I was 11 years old, and I got started playing golf via my dad, who was a scratch golfer, and I learned how to golf on the Petty Golf Course, which is... it belongs to a private school in Freehold, New Jersey, and I learned to play on that golf course with the pro there, whose name at the time was Bobby, and that is when I started golfing. So my dad brought me to the game, and I actually still have my first set of clubs in the garage. They are Lady Ram LXs, and they are very old, I can't believe that I was able to make contact with the ball with these clubs. So this was in about 1988 or 1989. I'm dating myself, but...
Yeah, that's good stuff. The game with your father and being able to grow up and have that quality time with him.
It was unbelievable, and, you know, I really consider it a blessing because I learned so many lessons on the golf course with my dad, and he was very strict, and, you know, it was impressed upon me that I really follow the rules. And so he handed me the USG rule book and told me to go ahead and read through it. And, you know, he really made me stick to the rules. So
I kind of understand, too, that you're kind of on this trip by yourself. Your husband's not going with you on this trip, but he's a golfer, too.
He is also a golfer. He's a little bit of a stronger golfer than I am. that's an eventual goal for me to be able to beat him at some point. He is actually going to Amelia Island in Florida, and we have played the Plantation course down there in the past, and it really is a terrific spot for a golf getaway. So he is going there, and he's taking our children with him to Florida, and I am going to Scotland to go enjoy the Ryder Cup and to play some golf and to travel and explore my roots a little bit.
Well, I'm sure the women in the audience are going to be contacting you to figure out how you arrange that to get your husband to take the kids and you get to go away for a week by yourself.
well, you know, I said that this was going to, you know, that I was going to be doing this, and then it just started to happen. Sometimes when you put things out there into the universe, they become truth. And so he, you know, I'm very grateful to him that he's taking the kids and going to Florida. And, you know, he does travel a great deal for business. He gets to go to the Super Bowl and things. And so this is my trip.
Oh, that's outstanding. How did you set this up? Did you set it up on your own? Did you go through a travel agency? Or once you found out you got the tickets to the lottery, how did you set the trip up?
Okay. I pretty much did everything by myself. So the plane tickets I booked by myself. And then my accommodations, I'm actually going to be staying in a house in Stirling, Scotland. And I booked that through GlenEagles2014.com and worked with a really great real estate agent named Ben, who found me this property where the homeowners, they're leasing rooms in their house to visitors. So I'm going to be staying in a Victorian house that faces a golf course in Stirling Castle with four other golfers that are going to be visiting Scotland for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. Now, you said you're taking your clubs along, so you intend to get a few rounds of golf in while you're over there. Anything, any place in particular you're planning on getting a few shots?
Well, it's funny that you should ask that. I am actually, Kieran and I, one of your co-hosts, your frequent co-hosts, and I are putting our names in the lottery to play the old course at St. Andrews. And so I'm crossing my fingers, and I'm hoping that our names get picked. Now, I've had a lot of good fortune lately, so, you know, I'm thinking that it's possible. Not only did I get chosen for these Ryder Cup tickets, but I was also chosen to attend a practice round at Augusta in spring 2015. And I think if I keep thinking positive, hopefully I'll find myself on the old course next Wednesday with Kieran.
Well, now listen, Kieran always brags to us that he makes par at the road hole, number 17.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be the on-site judge there, and you're going to have to report back to us. Make sure he counts all his shots sitting over the old hotel, around the big bunker there, and all that stuff, okay?
If he's ricocheting anything off of the wall, I am going to pay witness to it. So I will be able to tell you if he actually pars that hole.
Hey, before we let you go, give us a prediction. Is this going to be a runaway for the Europeans, or the Americans going to be competitive? What do you think?
I don't think it's going to be a runaway by any stretch of the imagination. I think that the group that's going to be in for a surprise is the Europeans, quite frankly. The Americans, the average world rank is 16, and the Europeans are 18. And I also saw this morning that Gallagher missed the cut at the Wales Open. And, you know, I know that a lot of people like to look at our guys and say that they're not trending in the right direction, but I don't think that that's true, and I see quite a few European team members that are struggling with their game right now.
Well, there you heard, fans. Don Maddox, fan of the Back Nine Report, predicts that it's going to be a closely fought contest and the Americans are going to be right in it.
Absolutely. Maybe we'll even come home with the cup.
Well, Don, we certainly appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us today. I know you have a busy schedule today, running with kids around to school and having some work done at your house and getting ready to go. So we're going to want a full report when you go back, so take lots of pictures. We'll look for them on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and keep us abreast of what's going on over there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay? Take care, Fred. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
Okay, have a great day.
And there you have it, Kieran. We've got eyes on you, buddy. We're going to get the scoop on your golf game after tomorrow.
Well, to be honest with you, Fred, I'm pretty much certain that Dawn is going to absolutely kick my ass on the golf course in a few hours. She's got some game. She's a competitor. My game is an absolute tatter. And I'm exhausted. It's going to be an absolute embarrassment. But, you know, Dawn's runner, good luck. You know, it continued as we entered the ballot on Monday morning and with two other friends as well who are playing with us, and we were successful. So it's going to be a fantastic experience for her. I know that our father, who is sadly no longer with us, would have loved to have been to the old course. So it's going to be quite an emotional thing for Dawn, I think, in the morning. But it's going to be a wonderful experience for her. And the weather forecast is to be fantastic as well. It's going to be nice and sunny and a little slight breeze, of course, to keep it interesting. But it's going to be a wonderful few hours in the old course, and I can't wait for it.
It sounds absolutely delightful. And you talk about her good luck, and she told me that she also got tickets to a practice round for the Masters next spring at Augusta. So she's on quite a streak.
And you know something, you mentioned about me parring the road hole. If her run of luck keeps going, she'll birdie the road hole tomorrow. So.
Well, that would be something. That wraps up our interview with our very important guest of the week, Dawn Mattox. So, Vincent, if you would take us to break, and when we come back, we're going to dive right into all the Ryder Cup information analysis that you could ever want.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and we want to talk a little bit about the history of the Ryder Cup before we get into a breakdown of the teams, analysis, pairings, and all that kind of thing. And Kieran, I have a question of the week for you. Do you know who is credited with the idea of holding the first matches between Great Britain and Ireland and the United States?
Is that a person or an organization?
It's a person.
A person. James Harnett of the Golf Illustrated.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. Thanks for playing.
Please
enjoy our nice parting gift chosen especially for you. You know, I keep telling Carlos and you that Toledo is the center of the golf universe.
Oh, no.
And you guys don't believe me. So Stacey Lewis, number one woman golfer in the world, was born in Toledo. We just had Marissa Steen, who won the money list on Sumatra Tour, is from Ohio. We've got the gentleman who won the U.S. Senior Amateur Medalist portion, Alan Fidel, resides here in Toledo, Ohio. And now, Kieran, we have the Ryder Cup was born in Toledo, Ohio. You probably didn't know that, but S.P. Germain, who is the father of public golf, discussed this with some people in the 1920s. He was responsible for really getting golf going here in Toledo and actually built the first nine-hole public golf course west of New York City in 1898 here in Toledo. Quoting David Shedlosky, who is a writer for the AP and put this on the USG website, S.P. Germain looms large in the inception of one of golf's most popular events, the Ryder Cup. He proffered the notion of creating an international match between golfers from Britain and America following the 1920 U.S. Open, and at one point prior to the creation of the Ryder Cup in 1927, an American businessman named Walter L. Ross, who's the president of the Nickel Plate Railroad and a member of Inverness,
offered to donate a trophy if such a match would be held. There were, in fact, two unofficial matches held in 1921 and 1926, the latter held in England, and attended by British seed merchant Samuel Ryder, who eventually donated the cup that now bears his name. S.P. Germain is quite an interesting character from here in Toledo. He built the first golf course. He was president of the Inverness Club when they bought the ground that the Inverness Golf Club now sits on. He was their first president. He had an incident with Bobby Jones in that 1920 was the first U.S. Open that Bobby Jones played in. And Bobby Jones got mad and walked off, and Germain followed him to the clubhouse and had a word with him. The 1920 U.S. Open, S.P. Germain, golf professionals weren't allowed in clubhouses back then, and Inverness was the first club to open the locker room to the professionals, and Walter Hagen took a donation among all the players, all the professionals, and donated a wonderful a clock that sits in the entryway at the Inverness Club today still. So Germain is a really interesting character, and just so you know, Kieran, Toledo is instrumental in the beginning of the Ryder Cup. But for many years, of course, you know, the U.S. trounced the teams from Great Britain and Ireland. From the first match held in 1927 to the unification of the Europe as a Ryder Cup team in 79, the U.S. won the Cup 19 times, with Great Britain and Ireland only garnering 3 wins and 1 tie. The concession by Jack Nicklaus to Tony Jackal on the 18th green to leave the matches in a tie in 1969. Since 79, it's been an entirely different story. The addition of continental Europe brought Seve Ballesteros and Bernard Langer into the picture, and the teams have become very balanced, and the competition has grown into immense proportions. Europe has won 7 of the last 9 Ryder Cups contested, and since 79, the overall record has been 7 U.S. wins, 9 European wins, and 1 tie. The Ryder Cup has become one of the most important sporting events in the world every 2 years. Even sports fans who are not interested in golf watch because of the excitement and the true competition. The Ryder Cup has become one of the most dramatic and highly anticipated events of every sports fan, not just golfers. Have anything to say on the history of the Ryder Cup, Kieran?
I do, and I don't believe a word you're saying about the Ohio thing, Fred. That doesn't make any sense to me. But
it's absolutely true.
I'm only joking, but I would never ever doubt you. I always every word you say, Fred, I take as gospel. It's always true. But yes, Glen Eagles had its own sort of part in the origin of the Ryder Cup back in 1921. A match between Great Britain and the United States took place before the 1921 Open Championship, and it was an idea that was sort of coined by the Golf Illustrated at the time, and they helped finance this. And a team of British legends with James Braid and Harry Varb and those kind of names took on an American team that included Walter Hagen. And it was the first ever American golfing team assembled in history. And they played at the King's Course at Glen Eagles, which is the James Braid golf course. The first hole of the King's Course is actually the practice range this week at the Ryder Cup. And Great Britain won that match, but that was really the first kind of taster for what would eventually become the Ryder Cup. So in a sense, the Ryder Cup was almost going to home this year at Glen Eagles. But, you know, overall, the Ryder Cup, as you say, Fred, has grown immeasurably in recent decades, certainly since it became more competitive. And it really has embodies all the qualities that we as sports fans, generally sports fans, look into an event. It's adversarial. Most sports are one team against another team or one individual against another individual. Golf is unique in respect that doesn't really happen too often. But in this, it does. It is pure head-to-head competition, and that is naturally attractive to sports fans. And I also think the format of the Ryder Cup, so match play, of course, is very exciting. Things can change so quickly. Momentum can shift dramatically, not just in one match, but also seemingly across the whole golf course. Suddenly when one guy makes a putt and the home crowd cheers, that seems to motivate the players and his teammates and other holes in the golf course to do the same thing. So it's amazing how quickly momentum can shift in the Ryder Cup. And also the format, you know, it's exciting to watch. And also you have that, there's also a slight nationalistic side to it as well, where people want to see the United States do well if they're American, or European if they're Europe, and want to see the British guys play well. So so many ingredients that have come together to make it the event that it is. There are negatives, of course, to the Ryder Cup. You know, it's become far too commercial in recent times. It's really a money-making machine now, and that has some real negatives to it. But when the golf starts on Friday, you know, there is nothing better, and when it's a close match, there is nothing more entertaining in the game of golf. Really, it's one of the best sporting events in the world in that respect. But, of course, the event, as you say, when Europeans came into the reckoning back in the 70s, since then it's been really dominated by Europe, and particularly in the last 20 years. And it's... I think it's been good for the event as well, you know, to make it more competitive. In the past, when the Ryder Cup was last in Scotland, the only time previously was 1973 at Muirfield, when the Americans won there quite comfortably. And the event was very different back then. You know, the crowds were nowhere near as big as they will be this week. You know, 50,000 people will be at Glen Eagles every single day this week of the Ryder Cup. You know, there wasn't anywhere near that number of people back in 1973. And the infrastructure of the Ryder Cup this year is so different. You know, the number of merchandise tents and the grandstands and the huge hospitality pavilion. You know, the infrastructure of the Ryder Cup is incredible. It's almost like a small town built on the edge of the golf course. Back in 73, there was nothing like that. You know, the Ryder Cup has grown so much in recent times, and it continues to do so. You know, it's the most watched golf event around the world. And, you know, for me personally, to have it so close to home, you know, it's thrilling and it's surreal. But the Ryder Cup, you know, it's something we look forward to every couple of years, Fred, and its history has been so rich and fantastic, and certainly another chapter in that history will be written this week at Glen Eagles.
Yeah, there's been some things have happened over the years. When I look back at some of the records and who holds them, I was surprised that most of the records are held by players from the 50s and 60s. Of course, that's when the U.S. was the strongest. But Billy Casper still holds the lead in the most points won for an American team with 23.5. Arnold Palmer is next with 23. I found it interesting, too, that even with the most appearances of 9 by Mickelson, this is his 9th Ryder Cup this year, Lanny Watkins, Arnold Palmer, or Billy Casper hold all of the scoring records for the U.S. squad. On the Euro side, Nick Faldo made 11 European Ryder Cup teams, played in 46 matches, and holds the Euro record for the most points won, 25. Longer has 24 and Montgomery 23.5. Christy O'Connor and Bernhard Langer both made 10 teams. Most appearances, as we said, Phil Mickelson, this will be his 9th. His overall record in 38 matches played is 14-18-6. Not a winning record. Lanny Watkins, Billy Casper, Raymond Floyd, and Jim Furyk all have 8 Ryder Cup appearances. And, Kieran, the one that really sticks in the craw in recent memory is, you know, everybody talks about the war at the shore and all these other things, but this last Ryder Cup held at Medina in Chicago just 2 years ago still burns deep down in the bellies of true American golf fans. The U.S. completely dominated the team competitions over the first 2 days, something that rarely happens, but inexplicably lost a seemingly insurmountable 4-point lead on Sunday in the singles matches. Keyed by Ian Poulter's amazing putting exhibition late on Saturday afternoon, the Europeans mounted the greatest comeback in Ryder Cup history, winning 8.5 points on Sunday to win the Cup 13.5 to 14.5. The Americans only managed 3.5 points in 12 singles matches on that final day. It still hurts me to say it to this day, Kieran. Team USA captain Tom Watson has said this Ryder Cup in Glen Eagles is for redemption for the Americans. I'm not too sure about that. I'm not sure anything will ever erase the memory of that complete and utter defeat in Chicago 2 years ago.
Well, you know, Fred, you mentioned there about American golf fans, and we heard Dawn a while ago. They're talking about her feelings about that weekend at Medina and how hard that was for her to swallow that bitter pill of seeing the U.S. team really threw away at one point a 6-point lead. They were 10-4 ahead before Poulter's dramatic comeback to make it eventually 10-6 to end of Saturday. So it was an incredible, you know, really in the end, it was very similar, of course, to the 1999 Ryder Cup at Brookline. Europeans had a similar advantage, but the same advantage, and lost the Ryder Cup in the same manner. thanks to a dramatic and dominant singles performance from the Americans at that time, 15 years ago now. And, you know, it's, again, for the Americans, as you say there, Fred, you know, the word seems to be redemption. You had that bizarre story where Keegan Bradley hasn't taken the clothes that he wore at Medina out of the bag yet. I thought that was quite incredible. So that's 2 years he's had the same clothes in this bag. And that tells you how motivated these guys will be. And Tom Watson has a very motivated team here. Guys who, you know, that hurt, that defeat. You know, yes, they've been beaten before the Americans and far too often for their liking in recent times, but to be so close to victory and then to throw it away, you know, that must really hurt these guys. And they're coming back here, coming to try and get, you know, redemption, you know, prove to themselves that they can win this thing, because, you know, it's been 6 years now, and that was the first win this century. So, you know, but again, they're facing a very strong European team. But I do agree with what Dawn said in her interview there, that the American team, for me, is certainly underrated. You know, you could argue, you can make a very strong argument that it has stronger depth than the European team. The European team is very top-heavy. The top five, six names in the European team are, you know, arguably, you know, six of the best eight players in the world. So, it's, again, but ultimately, in the end, these things are so unpredictable. And in the past, we've seen European teams that were apparently underdogs come through and win quite comfortably. People talk about major champions and how important that is. The 2004 Ryder Cup, which Bernard Langer's Europeans won by a record 9-point margin in Michigan, at Oakland Hills, you know, they did not have a single major champion in their team, which is quite a remarkable fact. But and then they won by, against Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Davis Love and Jim Furyk and all those guys, and they crushed them that week. So anything can happen in the Ryder Cup, and that's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah, it's just it's such a cool event, and the players, you know, they're used to playing for money, they're used to playing their own ball, you know, and not bothering anybody else. But for this, they're not really playing for money per se, and they are playing for their team and for their country. It's a little different atmosphere. So, Karen, why don't you give us a breakdown of the European team, how you see it. Give us a little bit of background maybe on each player and what you're thinking their strengths are.
Oh, yeah, sure. And I'll go through the team as they qualified. And number one was, of course, Rory McIlroy, the world number one, the two-time major champion this year, four-time major champion overall, undoubtedly the best player in the world right now. And he will certainly be the star man for Europe this week. And also, of course, the man that the Americans will want to hunt down. And this is Rory McIlroy's third Ryder Cup. He played in 2010 and 2012, where, of course, he very nearly missed his tee time after sleeping in and missing his alarm. And he's played nine matches in his two Ryder Cups, and he has a win-loss half percentage of four wins, three losses, and two halves. And he has a winning percentage of 55%, which may seem quite modest, but he's certainly going to hope to improve on that this week. And number two for the Europeans is Henrik Stenson, who, of course, last year really was heroic. He won the FedEx Cup and the race to Dubai, the first person to ever do that. Had a real dramatic resurgence in form, having been way down at 220th in the world 3 years ago. He came back up to the world number two position and dominated both tours in the second half of last year. This year, for Stenson, hasn't been quite so dominant or strong, but he's had a very solid year. And he'll come into he's made his first Ryder Cup appearance in 6 years. He's played two previously in 2006 and in 2008, and he's back. And his record's very kind of, it's not particularly impressive either, a 42% win percentage. But Henrik Stenson's a guy who, he's a powerful player, and he's a good putter in his day. He's certainly going to be a very valuable asset for Paul McGinley. Number three on the list is probably the most interesting player on the European team, and that is Victor Dubuisson, the Frenchman, 24 years old, who, and really, a year ago, not many people out with really the European Tour knew much about him. And even the guys on the European Tour do not know much about him. He's a very quiet character, very shy, very reserved, does not give much away. From what I've heard, he's a very nice guy to talk to and whatever, but he does not really disclose any personal feelings or really let anyone know about his past. So he's a very mysterious guy in that respect. Really, in this day and age, it's quite remarkable to be in that position where not many people actually know about your past. But he's certainly a very gifted player. He won in Turkey last year in a very strong field that included Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. He won there, his first win. And then he had that remarkable performance in February at the match for the WGC, where he lost in the final to Jason Day, but produced on the most remarkable, greatest short game shot anyone has ever seen. You know, a very talented player. But it'll be fascinating to see how he's incorporated into the team this week. You know, in terms of being, it's a team environment, team bonding. How will he connect with the other players? We'll have to wait and see. But certainly a player who could potentially be a star for the Europeans. Then we have another rookie as well, and that's Jamie Donaldson, the Welshman, 38 years old, an older rookie. He's had a fantastic couple of years in the European Tour, really grown from being a journeyman into one of the top players on the tour. He's had a very consistent season, and he qualified for the team outright and will make his first appearance in the Ryder Cup and becomes the first Welshman to play in the Ryder Cup since Philip Price back in 2002, who of course famously beat Phil Mickelson at the Belfry in the singles. And then we have Sergio Garcia, who's been one of the greatest Ryder Cup players of the last 15 years, a guy that sort of thrives in that environment, loves team atmosphere. He's a big soccer fan. He loves that sort of feel about the thing. And he's a fantastic ball striker, so he's fantastic for foursomes. His foursomes record with Luke Donald in particular was impressive. Of course, no Luke Donald this year, so Sergio Garcia has got to find another partner. But he's a guy who he'll play well with anybody else in that team. His qualities as a golfer are undisputed. And in the Ryder Cup, his personality comes alive and becomes a very infectious character. In Sergio's record, he has a 64% winning percentage. He's won 16 matches in the Ryder Cup. He's one of the best players of the last 15 years, and he'll be a real strong asset for Paul McGinley. Then you have Justin Rose, the US Open champion of last year. He's making his third Ryder Cup appearance this year. It's not been quite as a dominant a year from that. You know, these guys have really dominated the leaderboards in the past couple of years, McIlroy, Stenson, Garcia, Rose. But Rose, like Stenson, hasn't quite had the same year this year, but again, still played extremely well at times, won the Scottish Open, of course, and he'll come in here a solid player, as partnered well with Ian Poulter in the past, and he'll certainly probably continue that partnership this week. You have Martin Kaymer, who, of course, won the Players' Championship in the US Open, former world number one, also won the PGA Championship in 2010, and hold the winning putt at Medina in 2012. And he is making his third Ryder Cup appearance. Doesn't have the most inspiring of records. Certainly a player who, you know, he hasn't had the greatest form since winning the US Open at Pinehurst, but certainly a guy who, on his day, can beat anybody and will be a real asset to really in both formats, four balls and foursomes. Then you have Thomas Bjorn, the veteran of the team, really 43 years old now, the Dane, and he's a very impressive beard as well, of course. He's a former winner of the Johnnie Walker Championship at Glen Eagles. He's back in a golf course that he knows well and has performed well there in the past. And he's played in two Ryder Cups before, in 1997 at Valderrama and in 2002 at the Belfry, but 12 years without an appearance. He's had a real resurgence in form in the past year, played very well at the end of last year and the start of this year, which essentially guaranteed his place on the team. Hasn't been quite so good since then. Bjorn's a guy who, he's got a fantastic wedge game, will make a lot of birdies, and is a fantastic competitor, and you expect him to be actually quite an important player this week. He's one of those guys that, you know, he might surprise a few folk and actually play quite well and get some points on the board. And the final automatic qualifier for Paul McGinley's team was Graham McDowell, the 2010 US Open champion, who's played in the last three Ryder Cups and has a very modest 50% winning percentage. He's won five matches and lost five matches, so it's quite consistent in that respect. He's partnered with Rory McIlroy in the past. I don't expect that partnership to continue, not just because of the legal problems that they've had and maybe the friction on their relationship, but also because their record together wasn't actually that good. But McDowell's one of those guys who, he's a very consistent player, very straight hitter, consistent, you know, good putter, of course, hold the winning putt in 2010 at Celtic Manor, beating Hunter Mahan on the singles that day to clinch a dramatic victory on a Monday for Colin Montgomery's team that year. And McDowell's one of those players who has had, in theory, quite a quiet year, but has actually played better than you might expect. He's been in the top 10 quite a number of times this year. A fairly consistent year for McDowell. Nothing particularly spectacular, apart from a French Open victory, but a very solid year for McDowell. He's one of those guys who, in the team environment, in this format, should partner well with most players in that team. And then it came to the picks for Paul McGinley, which was a very, you know, in a way, quite a controversial thing in the end, with the way he went. He picked firstly Stephen Gallagher, a home favourite, nephew of Ryder Cup legend Bernard Gallagher, seven-time Ryder Cup player and three-time captain. He's his nephew. He's playing on home soil in Scotland. What a massive dream country it is for Stephen Gallagher. He has had a fantastic couple of years in the European Tour and literally missed out on automatic qualification by just one shot at the Italian Open, which was the last qualifying event for the European team. Stephen Gallagher is coming into this week, you know, obviously a rookie, and like De Bousson and Donaldson, who knows how the rookies are going to react to the pressure, you know, the intense atmosphere of the Ryder Cup. It's one of those things, really, which I don't think anyone can really understand and appreciate unless they've been in that position themselves. But Gallagher will have the home support behind him. He's played very well at the Eagles in the past. He has seven top tens at that golf course, so he has course form, And, you know, Gallagher will have the home support behind him and really be buoyed by that. And, again, could be an asset for Paul McGinley. Now we have Ian Poulter, the talisman at McDynah, who turned it all around. The guy who has a remarkable Ryder Cup record now. This will be his fifth Ryder Cup. He has won 12 out of 15 matches at an 80% winning percentage in the Ryder Cup. You know, a fantastic record, but he has had a very poor year. Hasn't played very well this summer, and hasn't shown much form. But again, Paul McGinley's hoping that Ian Poulter will show the form he's shown in the past and come alive and thrive in the atmosphere that he has done in the past. Of course, there are no guarantees. If Ian Poulter plays like he has done generally this year, he will be beaten quite consistently by the Americans. And of course, Tom Watson's already said that the American players are targeting Ian Poulter. He's really, other than Rory McIlroy, he's almost like the main man in the European team. So interesting to see how that develops this week. And the final pick was a Ryder Cup veteran, Lee Westwood, who will make his ninth appearance in the Ryder Cup for Europe, just two behind Nick Faldo's record. And Westwood was quite a controversial pick in the respect that his form hasn't been very good either this year. He was picked ahead of Luke Donald, who has a fantastic Ryder Cup record in the past. Neither of those players have played very well this year. But Lee Westwood brings a great deal of experience, of course, behind the scenes as well. He's a real influence in the dressing room and locker room. And in a team environment, he's very good, very positive character. You know, relaxes people and has a good laugh with them, and a very good shoulder for rookies. Nicholas Kolsarch, who was a rookie in 2012 at Medina, commented on this, saying that Lee Westwood, he partnered with that week, you know, with a massive help for him in settling into the Ryder Cup. So Lee Westwood perhaps might be that leader on the golf course, in respect that he might be paired with a Gallagher or a Dubuisson or a Donaldson, get them relaxed, feeling, you know, they're with a guy, playing with a guy who has been there and seen every single thing you can in the Ryder Cup. He's won the Ryder Cup six times now, which is a record for a European player. So the European team, Fred, is very strong, but, you know, you could argue that the team is very top-heavy. The bottom half of the team is not quite as impressive, and that could be where perhaps the Americans make their inroads and potentially trying to create an upset.
Yeah, but the thing is, with the Ryder Cup, you can hide guys. You know, you've got to set some guys out every session, and so the guys that maybe aren't on form maybe won't play that much. I got some numbers to start out here before we talk about the American team. The average world rank of all the players on both teams for the U.S., the average world rank is 16, and the average world rank for the European team is 20. So even with four of the top six players in the official world golf ranking being on the European tour, the bottom part of the team is not quite as strong as you say. You've got some higher world golf ranking guys down there at the bottom. In wins this year, the U.S. team had 9 wins. The European team had 13 wins. So you've got some guys that had more wins on the European team. You've got major winners. You've got 11 titles, major titles accounted for. You got Mickelson. You got Bubba Watson. So, you know, you've got a few major winner guys there. You've only got 8 major wins, with Rory now having 50% of those. So Justin Rose has 1. Keimer has a couple. And then rookies are evenly balanced. You've got 3 rookies on both teams. The combined records of all the players that are on the teams this year, for the American side, 43, 52, and 18. 52 losses, so almost 10 losses more than wins for the American players. On the European side, 69, 42, and 18. That's, you know, that is a big disparity. We're talking 26 wins more for the Europeans than for the U.S. team. And there's only 3 rookies on each team. So all these guys have been playing the last few years. So I thought those were kind of interesting statistics and numbers. But with my analysis for the American team, Kieran, the bigger story is who's not on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. You do not have Tiger Woods. You don't have Jason Duffner. You don't have Justin Johnson. And you don't have the FedEx Cup champion, Billy Horschel. If I were Captain Tom Watson, I'd be trying to figure out a way to change the rules and slide Billy Ho in there on my team somewhere. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I want him. You got number one point earner this year, Bubba Watson. Had a very good year, no question about it. He was a top point earner, won the Northern Trust at Riviera in February and the Masters in April. He had eight top tens, earned over $6 million in prize money in 2014. So he had a great year. You know, and I'm sure when he gets with the guys, you know, he's a good team player, but he's such a flake. You never know when something's going to bother him when he's going to turn it off. Ricky Fowler, to me, this is one of the key guys in the whole thing. On both teams, this is the guy that I'm watching, along with a couple others, but he is the main guy, I think. Since the U.S. Open in June, Fowler has been along with Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia, one of the three best players in the world. He's only finished outside the top ten once in his last eight events. And we're talking all top-tier events here, Kieran. None of this, little Sisters of the Poor Open here. I mean, these have all been big tournaments where he's been top-tenning. That stretch includes runners-up finishes at both the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, and top-tens at the WGC Bridgestone, the PGA Championship, and three of the FedEx Cup playoff events. His worst finish over that run was a T23 at the Deutsche Bank in Boston. One of his best tournaments of the year was a third-place finish at the WGC Accenture Match Play. He was beaten in the semifinals by eventual winner Jason Day, and then he beat Ernie Els in the consolation match. Number three, point earner Jim Furyk. What can you say? 44-year-old veteran who's steady, dependable, and compare him with anybody. Should be a huge factor in the foursomes especially. Furyk had four runners-up and 11 top tens and made every cut in his 21 starts in 2014. Jimmy Walker, three wins early in the season put him at the top of the PGA Tour money list for most of the year. He had a 10 top 10 finishes throughout the year and finished the year at number 7 in the FedEx Cup point standings. A Ryder Cup rookie, he is still long off the tee and has a wonderful putting touch. Number 5, we talked about this the other day, Phil Mickelson. I still can't believe he's on the team. He used his win at the 2013 Open Championship and a runner-up at the 2014 PGA Championship at Valhalla to earn his Ryder Cup points. The PGA was his only top 10 finish of the year. One top 10 finish all year, and he's on the Ryder Cup team. It's his worst year since 2003. It's the first year he didn't have a win since 2003. This will mark Phil's ninth appearance. It's the most ever by an American. This young U.S. squad needs his experience and leadership if they have any chance of beating your Europeans. Matt Kuchar, in addition to being a supreme competitor, he is liked by everyone. 11 top 10s, 24 starts, with one win and one runner-up. Mr. Consistent, not flashy, just solid in all aspects of his game, and he can play with anybody. He can play in the four ball. He can play in the foursomes. I expect to see a lot of Matt Kuchar this weekend. Number 7 was Jordan Spieth. Just turned 21 in July. Was 2-2 in the President's Cup last year as a captain's pick. No wins this year in his sophomore year on tour, but has established himself as one of the best players on tour. He did have two runners up and eight top 10 finishes and 18 top 25s. This just shows his competitiveness and consistency. He looks to be paired with one of the veterans like Furyk or Kuchar for four ball, possibly foursome. He is a pretty consistent player. Wild card in this thing, I'll talk about him some more later, but Patrick Reed, explosive, boisterous, brash, self-confident. First win at the end of the 2013 season plus two wins early in 2014 moved him well up the rankings. He has had success in the junior and collegiate levels in match play, but Ryder Cup is just slightly different than that. Will be interesting to see if he can control his nerves when the pressure builds late Saturday afternoon or in singles on Sunday. Zach Johnson grabbed the final automatic spot for the 2014 team. He started the year with three top tens in five starts, including a win at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions in Hawaii. He also added a playoff win over Tiger Woods in the World Challenge in December. Since a runner-up at the John Deere in July, he has not had a top 10 finish, however.
At 38 years old, he's one of the veterans that Captain Watson must depend on. Foursomes will be his forte in the team matches, possibly paired with one of the rookies. Number 10, the automatic captain's pick, was Keaton Bradley. He pairs well with Phil, as they were unbeatable at the 2013 President's Cup at Muirfield Village. Bradley rallied to earn an automatic pick, but fell just short and ended up at number 13 on the points list. His best finishes over the past 3 months were a T4 at the Greenbrier and at the WGC Bridgestone. He withdrew from the BMW Championship and the FedEx Cup playoffs over a rules issue and didn't qualify for the Tour Championship. Well, one good thing, he's going to be well-rested for the Ryder Cup. Hunter Mahan, number 11, still bears the scars from the 2010 Ryder Cup at Celtic Manor when he duffed a chip shot that allowed Gray McDowell to hole yet another putt to seal the win for the Europeans. Mahan won the Barclays and forced Watson to pick him as one of his captain selections. Mahan's a solid ball striker, down the middle type of guy that can be a good partner for a bomber in four ball or anyone in foursomes. Last guy on the team, Webb Simpson. Started the year hot with four top tens in his first five events, plus a win at the McGladrey last fall. In his last six tournaments while struggling to make the Ryder Cup team, he had two missed cuts and only one top ten finish, a T9 at the Deutsche Bank. He did qualify for the Tour Championship and finished the year at number 25 in the FedEx Cup. Simpson is also a fairways and greens kind of guy. He pairs well with his good buddy Bubba, and that's probably why he got the nod for the captain's pick over Brant Snedeker or Ryan Moore. He and Bubba will make a very strong four-ball team. So that kind of wraps up my, a little bit of analysis, a little bit of background on the guys on both teams. There's good points and bad points on all of that. Unless you've got something else to add, Kieran, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about pairings for the Friday sessions.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Kieran, are you still with us?
I certainly am, Fred.
Okay. Well, let's break into our part two of our analysis here. And we're going to take a shot at giving everyone an idea of who we think will partner up for the sessions. And, of course, Friday morning they will start with four-ball matches, and then in the afternoon they will play foursomes. They will repeat that again on Saturday, and then on Sunday there will be the 12 single matches. So, Kieran, I understand you spent quite a bit of time analyzing up and down and forward and backward all of your pairings there, and you've come up with some surefire winners to tell our listeners.
Well, I'm not so sure about surefire winners, Fred, but I did spend quite a while agonizing over this, and it's hard to sort of pick players for both sessions and try to put pairings together and who's going to fit well with a better player, but ultimately these are my picks. I'm not trying to predict what Paul McGinley is going to do. You have no idea what he's going to do. I saw who he put out on the practice rounds today and which players played together. You had Rory McIlroy, Martin Kaymer, Sergio Garcia played together today. Ian Poulter, Justin Rose and Stephen Gallagher played together today, while Thomas Bjorn, Lee Westwood and Jamie Donaldson were together, as were Henrik Stenson, Victor Dubuisson and Graham McDowell. So perhaps can we read anything into that? I'm not sure. But I went for my picks for Friday four ball, in the morning, 7:35 in the morning. It all kicks off at Glen Eagles. The first tee will be tremendous. The atmosphere, 2,000 people around. The first tee will be unbelievable. And there'll be a lot of pressure, a lot of nerves for both teams, and a lot of anticipation and excitement. And I'm going to send out one of the strongest partnerships I think they can Paul McGinley can muster. I'm going to send out the world number one, Rory McIlroy, four-time major champion, the best player on the planet right now. And I'm going to pair him with another major champion from this year, Martin Kaymer. Martin Kaymer has an excellent four-ball record in his two Ryder Cup appearances, and I think he'll partner well with Rory McIlroy, considering they play together today, of course. So I'm going to send out Rory McIlroy and Martin Kaymer as my first pick, my first match, Fred. And my second pairing, going out slightly later, will be two Englishmen who have partnered together in the past, in 2008 and in 2012 at Medina, very successfully, were unbeaten at Medina, won both their matches together. And two guys who, they're good friends, and one of them, of course, is really, he's kind of Mr. Ryder Cup, and that is Ian Poulter. I'm going to send out, I'm going to unleash the Poults on the US team very early on in my Ryder Cup team, Fred. He's going out second alongside 2013 US Open champion Justin Rose. That's my second team out. And my third pairing, again, this is where things get a little bit tricky for me. I changed it a few times, but I decided to settle on these two here. Two guys who are consistent. One guy hits the ball further than the other, but they're both players who will make a lot of birdies, are top competitors, and really in the end, they both putt very well. And that is the 2013 FedEx Cup champion and Race to Dubai champion, Henrik Stenson, making his return to the Ryder Cup after 6 years. And I'm going to put him alongside Graham McDowell, 2010 US Open champion and the man who held the winning putt at Celtic Manor 4 years ago. That's my third pairing out in the golf course. And my final pairing was perhaps the most difficult one to muster. But in the end, I'm going to put a rookie in this one. I'm going to send out Jamie Donaldson, a guy who is in rampant form, is making a ton of birdies, and is playing the best golf of his life right now. He's going to go out there and in the fourth match alongside a veteran player who's making his return to the Ryder Cup after 12 years, a former winner at Gleneagles, and that is Thomas Bjorn. So Jamie Donaldson will partner Thomas Bjorn and Thomas Bjorn's beard. The three of them will be there together, and that's my four-ball team, Fred, my four-ball selection. So who have you got against them?
So you're sitting. Who are you sitting now?
I'm sitting at Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, Stephen Gallagher,
wow,
and Victor Dubuisson.
And Gallagher. Wow.
Yeah.
You're sitting Sergio.
Yep. It was a tough call, Fred. It was very tough.
See, I want Sergio playing. I want him invested. I want him out there and involved. I would put, I don't know if you put Sergio and Donaldson together, but I would have put Sergio instead of Bjorn someplace, probably. Maybe put GMAC with Donaldson, but you've got some interesting thoughts there. I would not leave Sergio out. I would want him in there for sure. Well, anyhow, let me tell you what we've got against you here. We're gonna win this first session. I can see it right now. We're going to come out with guns blazing with the Phil and Keegan show. They put on such a great performance at Muirfield Village that I'm going to leave them together, and I'm going to let them open up the festivities, and they'll probably take Rory and Kaymer by, you know, it'll be over by 13 or 14 probably. Next off, we're going to have Bubba out there leading cheers and on the tee and with his good buddy, Webb Simpson. And we want Bubba to feel good and be ready to go because we need his points. So I'm going to let him go second right off behind Phil and Keegan. So then we've got I want three guys playing as much as possible. Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and Patrick Reed. So I'm going to put Jordan Spieth with Matt Kuchar in the morning four ball in the third group out. I like this pairing a lot. I think this pairing works for far ball as well as foursome. And until they really decide that they do not play well together, I'm going to ride this horse all the way through. My fourth group out for the morning will be Ricky Fowler and Jimmy Walker. Ricky's not technically a rookie. He was in the 2010 Ryder Cup. Jimmy Walker is. Walker's long. He's a great putter. Fowler's a competitor. He's got all-round game. I think that makes a really strong team. So I'm sitting Mahan and Furyk out of the four ball, and I'm also sitting Zach Johnson and Patrick Reed. I would really like to get Patrick Reed into the morning four ball because I want to get him involved, but I don't know where I would put him. With only this is where and Kieran, this is where the President's Cup is different than the Ryder Cup. If this was President's Cup, everybody plays. There's no sitting out, so I'd get Patrick Reed in there and get him going. But because I've got to sit out four guys, Reed is kind of the odd guy out of this thing. So the short hitters, Mahan, Furyk, and Zach Johnson are out. But also then I got to sit out Patrick Reed. I just don't have a place for him in these groups. Any comment on those?
Well, I think, Fred, you've picked four very strong pairings there. And I think it just illustrates to people who are listening tonight and that the U.S. team is a lot stronger than many people are giving them credit for. And, you know, there's a lot of very good players in there who really do partner up very well, you've got to feel. And this is a very American-style golf course, the Glen Eagles Centenary course, designed by Jack Nicklaus. And I think the Americans will, you know, those four American pairings right there, that might not be too far away from what Tom Watson selects on Friday morning, Fred.
Yeah, as I was telling you earlier, they just kind of fall together. I mean, it's just almost like it's like a no-brainer. I don't know how he can mix and match and change them around very much. So let me go on into the afternoon. We'll talk about this for a little bit. So we go to foursomes in the afternoon. And foursomes, as you know, is a completely different ball game. You want guys that can really get along well, are not going to, you know, get put out when somebody puts them into a bad place. You know, you want steady golfers. So this is where you're going to want the Mahan, the Furyk, the Zach Johnson. You're definitely going to get them involved in the afternoon foursomes. So because Furyk and Mahan did not play in the morning in four ball, I'm going to send them out first, Jim Furyk and Hunter Mahan, as my first foursome out in the afternoon. My second foursome will be the Phil and Keegan show. I'm going to run them, trot them right back out. And this is where I come into a problem. Because I haven't played Zach Johnson and Patrick Reed, I've got to play those guys. Now, I really want to put Zach with Webb Simpson in the afternoon, but I may have to sit Webb and put Zach with Patrick Reed. Okay? So my teams then become Furyk, Mahan, Phil and Keegan. I'm still going to run Kuchar and Spieth out there. As I mentioned, I'm riding those guys. I'm going to the whip with those guys. And I'm also going to go with Zach Johnson and then Patrick Reed for my fourth foursome. That one is I have the most question about, but I've got to get Reed involved. I've got to get him in there. And I really have to set a team that I really like. I've got to set Ricky Fowler and Jimmy Walker, and I think they would make a fantastic foursome team, but I've got to sit four guys. And like I say, this is why the Europeans can stay competitive and be so strong in Ryder Cup, because the U.S. ends up setting really good teams that could beat the lower teams of the Europeans.
Well, it's funny you say that, Fred, and this is a fact that I have looked up. In the last two Ryder Cups, there have been 9 sessions of play, and Europe have only won 2 of them. America have won 5 of them, which seems quite incredible given that Europe won the last two Ryder Cups. But Europe won the singles, obviously, at Medina, and they won the Sunday session, as it became, which was a combined foursomes and four-ball session at Celtic Manor. But other than that, the Americans have actually dominated the team format in the Ryder Cup, which is a big surprise. As in the past, it was certainly, as you say, the other way around. But my foursomes, Fred, to go against your guys, and I'm sending out one of my biggest pairings here. I'm sending out Rory McIlroy again in the afternoon, and this time he's going to be paired alongside, you know, one of the best drivers in the game, one of the best ball strikers in the game, a guy that's playing really well this year. They've had their moments. Obviously finished first and second at the Open Championship, and that is Sergio Garcia. He's going to partner Rory on the Friday foursomes for me, and that's a partnership that your guys will just not beat, Fred. And my second foursomes pairing, I'm bringing in two guys that I rested from the morning, and that is Lee Westwood, great veteran of the Ryder Cup team, ninth appearance for him. a guy, he's a long hitter, he's a far better ball striker than a lot of other players in the team. He's a very good forces player in that respect, consistent, solid, and so much experience. And that's why I'm putting him alongside Stephen Gallagher, who have the home support behind him. I feel having Lee West with that experienced shoulder next to him, a guy he's there, reliable. West has been there, seen it all before, and I think Gallagher and West will actually partner very well. Gallagher's a far better putter than West, and I think the combination of the two will work very well in foursomes, and that's my second foursomes pairing. And my third foursomes pairing is involving a guy that played in the morning and also a guy that didn't play in the morning. And I'm going to put Graham McDowell in the third match, a guy that's fancy his game in foursomes, a straight hitter, consistent ball striker, you know, good putter as well, but he's a very solid foursomes player. And I'm going to put him alongside perhaps the mystery man of the team, maybe the enigma of the team, if you like, and that is Victor de Buisson. They played together today at Glen Eagles in a practice round, and I feel that Victor would actually, I think Graham McDowell said today, he feels more comfortable being the senior member of a partnership, which is why he doesn't feel too comfortable playing with Rory McIlroy in four balls. He wants to be the senior part of the team, and I think he'll be very comfortable in his role as senior player alongside the rookie, de Buisson. I think that could work very well. De Buisson is such a fantastic short game, he's a long hitter, and I think he could be a very useful player, potentially one of the stars of the week. That's my third pairing. And my final pairing, Fred, is a pairing I used in the morning as well, and that is Justin Rose and Ian Poulter. I feel I can rely on these guys to play well, connect together, and they get a point on the board. So I think my foursomes pairing, Fred, are stronger than your ones.
You know what? I can't really disagree with that. I love the way you have Poulter and Rose closing out the day. That is a really strong pairing. And I really like the blockbuster Rory and Sergio at the top. And, you know, you're getting Gallagher involved. He's along with Westwood. They can just go out and have a nice round, not worry about it so much, just go play. And GMAC with Dubuisson, you know, Dubuisson hits it in the bushes. GMAC's got a pretty good short game. He can handle that. I like your thinking on that. I do like that. You know, foursomes has always been a challenge for the American team, and every year it seems like foursomes is the downfall. So, and I really think, and I've said this before, but I really think part of our problem is that we have to sit four guys. I would really like to get Ricky Fowler and Jimmy Walker in there in the afternoon in the foursomes, but there's just not enough room. I got to get some of these other guys in. So once I see how these guys perform, then I know who I'm going to pair up and what I'm going to do the next day. But the first day, you know, people are at work on Friday, you know, and they maybe don't get to see the matches. But you know what? Those first day matches tell you a lot. So you guys need to set your DVRs or whatever and check those matches out at night when you get home or over the weekend or whatever, because the Friday matches are really, really important, and they set the tone for the rest of the week. You can really see the body language on the players that are into it, who are not maybe confident, not playing that well, and are not comfortable in that scenario. It's really interesting to see. So that's our pairings. Kieran, let's go on. We've prepared some keys, what we think are keys for each team to win. Why don't you go ahead and give your keys first, and then I'll follow up when you're done.
Yes, Fred. I'll quickly say first, though, I think our pairings are the four balls and foursomes. I think you win the four balls, Fred. I think I win the foursomes. So after day one of the Ryder Cup, both teams will be tied in that case. But anyway, yes.
If the U.S. can come out of the team matches on Saturday evening, well, I'm going to put that in my keys, but if they can be within a couple points, then they have a chance on Sunday in the singles. But go ahead with your keys.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Yes, well, I've identified a number of keys for Team Europe. Certainly, obviously, we can kind of overblow these things and look at all the stats and kind of, you know, get muddled up in that. But really, there are some key facts for Europe and areas they really do have to deliver on if they are to be successful, if they can retain the Ryder Cup. And for me, it comes in for four things. I think, firstly, Europe's big stars need to deliver. We've spoken about Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson, and Justin Rose. They are four of the world's top six ranked players right now. And those big reputations, those big form, you know, those guys have played so well in the past 18 months or so. Those guys have dominated leaderboards in the past couple of years. But they have to show that in the Ryder Cup if Europe are to have a chance of winning. I say earlier on, you say the Europeans' top half is stronger, but these players have to deliver if that apparent strength is to become advantageous to Paul McGinley's team. And I say, you know, all four, particularly McIlroy, will be scouts for Tom Watson's men, and each point gained by the Americans against them will only galvanise the visiting team even further. So, for me, the Europeans' big-name players, they really have to deliver this week. And secondly, you have the rookies as well. The rookies play an important part in the Ryder Cup. Both teams have three, so they're evenly balanced in that respect. But I think you have Jamie Donaldson, Richard DeBuisson, and Stephen Gallagher. All three have had excellent seasons, and they fully merit their place in the team. But however, you know, like any Ryder Cup, it's key to embed these rookies. You know, since Mark James back in 1999 controversially left out Andrew Coulthart, Jarmo Sandelin, and John Vandeveld until Sunday at Brookline, didn't play them at all until the final day. I mean, those few are rookies. The common consensus has been to play your rookies as soon as is feasibly possible. And we did our pairings there. I got all my pairings, my rookies out on the first day. And Dawson's coming in good form, tied for fourth at Celtic Manor. And I said before, DeWitton's really the kind of mystery player here, mysterious guy, shy, the players don't know him too well. He has so much talent, he could be a real asset for Paul McGinley. And Stephen Gallagher, of course, is one of the stories of the week, 39 years old, heroic effort to get on the team in Scotland, home soil, in front of his home fans. And you're all free of undisputed quality, but the Ryder Cup is a whole new experience. The pressure of standing on that first tee is a sensation only understood by those who have been in that position before. Some are fried under that anxiety, and some have withered. So those three guys there could be very important for Paul McGinley. And I said before, you've read there about the struggle for European, the last two Ryder Cups for Europe in the team competitions, the pairing matches, four ball and foursome, and I think they've got to improve on that. Before, the European team was generally regarded to be stronger in the foursomes and in more recent times the four balls. Their players seemingly partner better together than their American counterparts, but that hasn't been the case in the recent encounters. So, for me, Europe cannot rely on another Medina. They've got to improve in the four balls, in the foursomes, if they are to retain the Ryder Cup. They cannot go out there and rely on dominating Sunday. If they do rely on that, they're going to end up getting beaten. So that's something they need to improve on on Friday and Saturday. And my final point for key area for Europe, Fred, is Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood need to find their game. Both Englishmen have been stalwarts of Europe for more than a decade now. Westwood made his ninth appearance. Poulter is obviously the talisman at Medina. Fantastic record in the Ryder Cup. But these reputations count for nothing if they cannot find the game. If they cannot improve their form from where it's been this summer, they will be beaten. And their reputations count for nothing. And they'll be scalped to the American players, particularly Ian Poulter. You know, both guys were picked really on evidence due to their past performances. They have to justify those picks by performing well this week. Otherwise, Europe may be struggling. So those are my four key areas, Fred, for Europe to have a chance to win this week. What are your American key areas?
You know, I have several, Kieran, but they are. First of all, the rookies have to play big. Jimmy Walker, Jordan Spieth, and Patrick Reed have to win some points. Of those three guys, you know, they need to get, you know, probably 5 points somehow from those three guys to have a chance. Another young guy, Ricky Fowler, has to take charge. He has had a phenomenal year and is playing with a ton of confidence. Plus, he's a very good match play player. He's got to be big in this thing. Phil Mickelson's had a crummy year, but his interest is up. He loves the Ryder Cup. He, along with Matt Kuchar, have to be the two veterans that have a strong voice, and it's time for them to step up and really rally the troops. Then you've got the steady guys, Furyk, Zach Johnson, Mahan. They have to come through in the foursome matches. The foursomes have always been the weakest area for the U.S. teams. They've got to get the job done. The matches, I really think the match will be won. The Ryder Cup will be won in the first four sessions. Yes, the average official world golf ranking is higher for the U.S., or I mean, it's better, it's lower, it's better. The Europeans are strong at the top, but not quite as deep at the bottom. But McIlroy, Garcia, Stenson, Rose, they're nearly a lock
for at least 3 points in singles right there. So if you can go in to Sunday, if Europeans can go into Sunday with a four-point lead, I don't see them losing it. I just don't see how American can counter anything more than a 1 or 2 point deficit. Who is going to counter Ian Poulter? Who on the American team can find some putter magic to inspire the U.S. team and get them to push through? Could it be Patrick Reed? Could it be Ricky Fowler? I can't tell you the answer to that. I think it's one of those two guys, maybe both of them. But I think those two guys could be the keys to the American success, if there's going to be one. Well, Karen, I'm going to do my quick wrap-up, and then I'm going to turn it back to you real quick for any final thoughts you might have on the Ryder Cup. But we've talked about the team makeup, the statistics, and the venue. The only thing that matters for me is watching the best golfers in the world getting nervous and engaging in a true golf competition. It is golf as it was meant to be. Maybe a bit overblown, too much press coverage, a camera watching every move, twitch, scratch, and slight pick of the nose, but still, it never fails to draw me in. I can't turn away. I want to see every swing, every missed putt and duff chip shot. Some players will be able to overcome the nervous energy and enormity of the situation to perform at their very best. Will it be a rookie, Victor Dubuisson, Jamie Donaldson, Stephen Gallagher, Jimmy Walker, Patrick Reed, or Jordan Spieth? Will it be a captain's pick, Lee Westwood, who has had a dreadful year, redeem himself and help lead the Europeans to another Ryder Cup win? Can Phil Mickelson, who has also not had his best year, make his season and rally the Americans to win on foreign soil? Much is expected of world number one Rory McIlroy. And if the Europeans are to do well, he, Sergio, Henrik Stenson, and Justin Rose, three of the top six golfers in the world, must perform well. Will Ian Poulter once again don the red cape and summon up the seemingly unworldly putting prowess that single-handedly turned around the 2012 Ryder Cup? The Ryder Cup has become the Super Bowl of golf. Every match, every shot, and every putt has meaning in the overall scoring. With so much riding and the players, it becomes must-watch theater. I can't wait for them to begin, Kieran. I'm forced to predict a winner. I'll root for the U.S. win, but in my heart, I feel the Europeans will succeed once again and the winning cup by a three-point margin.
Well, I very nearly agree with that, Fred. I think it'll be very close this week. I see it being a lot closer than many people think. I think it will come down to the last three or four matches on Sunday in the singles. The American team, to me, is a lot stronger than people think, and I think they might actually perform better in the team matches than Europe will. I think Europe will be dominant in the singles. And I've always said I want to see a tie in the Ryder Cup. I want to see a 14-14 half match. I think that has also a possibility. It very nearly happened last time. But I'm going to give a slight edge to Europe, and I'm going to say that I think they might just win by 2 points, 15-13. That's my prediction for Gleneagles this week.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting no matter what the score, no matter who wins. It's always a must-watch TV. There's only one other tournament this weekend to talk about. Excuse me. The Nature Valley First Tee Open at Pebble Beach and Del Monte Golf Course on the Monterey Peninsula. The First Tee golfers are paired with Champions Tour players. Kirk Triplett was the winner last year there. It's a $1.9 million purse, and with $285,000 going to the winner. You've got Davis Love, Rocco Media, John Cook, David Frost, Tom Pernice Jr., and last week's winner, Paul Goitis, in the field. Also, we want to mention, talking about Ryder Cup, the Junior Ryder Cup finished up today with the Americans ending up with a win. They took a 7.5 to 4.5 lead into the final day, and they were able to pull out the matches today and won quite handily over the European team. So hopefully that's an indicator of what's going to happen this weekend. And, Kieran, as always, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show with us talking. You bring so much expertise and historical knowledge of all things golf, and especially you're sitting right there on the doorstep
of Glen Eagles and right in the middle of all the action, and you're going to be there and see it and play the old calls tomorrow. That is great. I'm glad you were able to be on the show with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Fred. It's been a pleasure as always, and I must admit, you know, I'm going to have like no sleep ahead of the old course. I'm teeing off in, well, in just over 5 hours, so you know, it's going to be a long day tomorrow, but it's going to be a fantastic week here in Perthshire. I'm looking forward to the old course for me in a few hours, and then the Ryder Cup, of course. You know, really, for us as golf fans, there's nothing better. I can't wait.
Well, we'll be back next week with a complete recap of all the action from this week's Ryder Cup action. Please join us at 8 p.m. next Tuesday. You can download our show through TuneIn or through Blog Talk, and we're also on iTunes. So, Vincent, thank you for producing the show this evening since Carlos couldn't be here, and good night, everybody.
Good night.